Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Afternoon, you are listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and on digital, and you can listen via the Sheffield Live website. It's just me again this week, Martin, so sit back, kick off your shoes and enjoy. Hello. Another week of Denise being AWOL, MIA. Hope she's having a lovely weekend. And I've got to slap together a show here. I haven't got an interview this week. I've got a lot of music to play. And I was thinking of going for very disparate sources, but I've landed on something which I think will bring some sort of cohesion to the music I'm playing and the reason why. We'll get to that in a moment. Last week, we just received notice of the passing of one of my favourite actresses, Catherine O'Hara, who died from a brief illness at the age of 71 last Friday. We did mention it, and I just thought it deserved maybe a little more of a mention than what we were able to fit in last week, as O'Hara is one of these people who maybe a lot of people up until maybe recently have not been able to put a name on her apart from, oh, she's the mum from Home Alone. But she has been in a number of films and television shows which would make her immediately recognisable, if not people being able to put a name to her. She is Canadian, and she started off with the Second City comedy troupe in Toronto. It started off in comedy clubs and was then elevated into a TV show in Canada, SCTV, and that ran for almost 8 years. And then she started picking up film roles in Hollywood. I think I mentioned last week, one of the first time I can ever remember seeing her was in Martin Scorsese's After Hours. And shortly after that, she was in a film which had a huge amount of attention, Beetlejuice, where she played Delia Dietz, the incredibly pretentious artist whose sculptures haunted the film in various ways. And she was also called back a couple of years back to reprise the role in Beetlejuice. But then in 1990, became her role as the mother in Home Alone, followed closely 2 years later by Home Alone 2, the mother who forgets her son when the family go off to holiday. I think it's the fact that this film now is on every Christmas. So you can't avoid it. I'll just say these films are on every Christmas. So her role is immediately recognisable. And it's like from that where she sort of stamped her her name as being this actress who could be really funny, could be a bit edgy, almost ready to go into a fit of hysteria at any moment. Because of that, she was always in great demand, and she's been in so many films, both dramatic and comedic roles. One of the most fruitful partnerships she had was with director Christopher Guest, otherwise known as Nigel Tufnell from Spinal Tap, and she appeared in four films that he directed. Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, and For Your Consideration. Three of those films being mockumentaries. Now, with those four films, they were co-written by Eugene Levy, with whom she had worked in Second City back in the 1970s. And the two of them were put together again for Schitt's Creek, which became one of her signature roles and one of those which sort of kept her very, very in the public's eye in recent years. Schitt's Creek is about a rich family who suddenly lose their fortune and have to move to a motel out in the middle of nowhere. there's Moira, her doting husband, and two very, very spoilt children who have trouble acclimatising to their more modest means. But Moira is an absolutely amazing creation. She lives in a delusional world where she thinks she is the world's greatest actress. She dresses in the most outlandish fashion choices, but O'Hara always pulls it off. She looks great in all of these horrendous outfits that she wears. And she has this really peculiar diction. The way she pronounces words is, you can never anticipate how she's going to pronounce it, because she does similar sounding words very, very different. The show ran for six seasons. And again, it was co-written by Eugene Levy. And it's one of those shows that I'm sure now will be in complete rotation. But it's a it's a beautifully funny little show. And the thing I like about it is very, very good-natured. It's like you could really take the mickey out of Moira and her family. But quite often, they come up trumps against a fairly, sometimes, let's say, ignorant and quite nasty locals. So, unfortunately, she passed them away, say, last week. She had just been in Seth Rogen's The Studio. And, yes, she'd been playing a studio executive in that. And, as normal, had been great. So that was a really, really sad loss. That's why I couldn't really bring myself to say much about it last week. She will be sorely missed. And that's it. I don't think I've got anything else to say now because, yeah, I'll miss her. Right, I haven't got much in the way of gossip or anything, but I do have two items of trailer trash. First off is, I saw this last night, a new Danny Dyer film, One Last Deal. Now, by this seems to be about a football agent trying to secure a multi-million pound deal for a player that he represents. And he's in his office, the phone rings, and someone is threatening him and the footballer that he deals with. And as the trailer shows us, it seems to be a series of increasingly frantic calls between people with Dyer trying to roust up some money as he's being blackmailed by this mystery caller. So, this is... it looks like it's part of this mini-genre of person in room on their own and the communication being via telephone to other characters. And as I say, there's been a few films like this. If you can remember back about 10 years or so, there was Ryan Reynolds stuck in a coffin in Buried with his mobile phone. There was Tom Hardy speeding up and down the M6 in his BMW in Lock. There was a great Danish film called The Guilty with a policeman on a help desk trying to talk through something with a woman who was being menaced in her own home, or was she? And there's only one actor on screen in all of these films. Now, I'm sort of assuming that this is what this new one with Danny Dyer is going to be. And I think it's all going to be down to whether or not your liking of Danny Dyer extends to being in the same room as him for an hour and a half. That's a matter of choice, and I think I'll probably give it a go. He's charismatic, is Danny. And the other trailer that I've seen is Ready or Not 2, Here I Come. Now, this goes back to a film way back now, it seems, from 2019, Ready or Not, which was a really smart little horror movie. About a bride on her wedding night having to be brought into her in-laws' family traditions, which were very, very nasty, very, very bloody and very, very graphic, as she had to spend her wedding night fighting for her survival in the home of her in-laws and escaping death and also dishing out a lot of death to get her through till dawn. It was a great little movie, hour and a half, didn't waste any time at all. So it's coming back for a sequel. And in this one, she's brought back to play the game again, and this time with her sister in tow. So I don't know. Ready or Not was just so brilliant that... I'll give this one some time, I think, and, yep, I'll give it a go, see what it's like, and hopefully not be too disappointed from it. So that's it for news and gossip. music choices. So this week, I looked through my William Shatner collection and thought, nah, I don't know, there's enough to fill a show. And then just by chance, I was flicking through some Blu-rays, and I came upon David Byrne's True Stories, his sort of mockumentary about a small town in Texas, Virgil, Texas. And I was amazed to see it's 40 years old this year, 40 years. And it's a very David Byrne-ish sort of film, as he plays a guy coming around and meeting the people, seeing the sights of Virgil, Texas, trying to ingratiate himself with the locals by wearing a huge and very silly 10-gallon cowboy hat. And during this time, he visits shopping malls, houses out in the middle of nowhere, vast arrays of warehouses. And he meets the population, some of the population of Virgil, who, on the surface of it, are all quite quirky, idiosyncratic. But as the film unfolds, Byrne doesn't take the mickey out of these characters. He finds something incredibly beautiful about most of them. And also something very, very ordinary. These people are the ordinary. And to, within the film, bring out the extraordinary from the ordinary. And saying that, as I say, it's a mock documentary. So these are actors playing these characters. And they're not based on actual people. They're fictional characters. And I always remember that this was the first time I'd ever seen John Goodman in anything, and shortly afterwards he would become very famous by being Roseanne Barr's husband in the TV show Roseanne, and even outstayed Roseanne in that show after she was dumped by the network. So I'm gonna kick off with a track from the soundtrack. Now, the film inspired a Talking Heads album called True Stories. But in the film, most of the songs that were on the Talking Heads album were actually performed by actors playing the characters. But I'm going to kick off with probably one of the few straight Talking Heads numbers from the film. And this is Love for Sale.
I'll be a video for you if you turn.
Well, Talking Heads there, and Love for Sale from the soundtrack of True Stories. Lots more of that coming throughout the rest of the show. Right, I've got a couple of reviews to do this week. The first off being the new Jason Statham film, Shelter. Jason Statham, what can one say about Jason Statham? A man of many franchises. Crank, Transporter, Fast and Furious, The Meg, The Expendables. God, there's such a list of them that he has got to fall back on whenever he reaches a fallow moment in his career or a week that he might have spare in his calendar. But there are a couple of films of his which I think are slightly outside this mould. And he's made a couple of, I think, of pretty good little thrillers. But they are made and set in Britain. And they tend to be a little more considered, far grittier and based in a better sense of realism than what his big Hollywood budget films are. And this new one, Shelter, is one of those. As I say, he's made such films as Blitz, where he's a cop chasing down a serial killer over London who is murdering a policeman. There's the really interesting Hummingbird, where he's a down-and-out homeless guy who somehow stumbles into the penthouse flat of this rich guy who's away on the other side of the world for a few months, whose clothes fit him exactly. And Statham smartens himself up, cuts his hair, dresses in a nice Paul Smith suit and goes out and encounters a series of adventures. I should say that he is an ex-Special Forces commando in this, who's hit rough times. And there's a similar setup with Shelter. Statham's living alone on a remote Scottish island, albeit a lot of the film's rural locations were shot in Ireland. He is delivered some supplies from the mainland by a friend of his who he knew from being in the services, and a young girl brings him food and things, and she tries to start a relationship with him, but he's keeping himself very, very secret. And then there's a storm which washes the young girl ashore, but at the same time also alerts the people that Statham is hiding from that he is alive and where he is, and hence then proceeds a madcap, mayhem-strewn chase from the Hebrides to London. And this film, what I liked about it first, it's got a very, very slow build-up. It's about half an hour before the action kicks in. And I quite enjoyed that. There was a bit of time to see a tentative relationship build up between him and Jesse, young girl in it. I think she's supposed to be maybe 13 or 14. I'm not exactly sure. Then when the action does arrive, it has a bit of force to it. And it's like it's those sort of action sequences, yeah, they're a bit over the top, but he's not battling 20 or 30 people at once. The stunts are good, but they're not unrealistic. Yeah, the action has a decent bit of oomph to it. And at the same time, there's a sense of a relationship increasingly being built up between these two people, who we find out neither of whom have anyone else in their world by the end of the film. One of the things it did remind me of was Luc Besson's Leon. And there's a very, very strong sense of that towards the end of the film, where they have to part, it seems. But overall, I sort of quite enjoyed this. Maybe it's just a guilty pleasure for me, these type of Statham films. And it's these ones particularly I really enjoy. He's a lad from down the road in Shirebrook, Derbyshire, and boy, has he made a career for himself. And for the roles that he plays, I think he's quite good. And he does comedy as well, if you've seen Maria McCarthy comedy Spy. You know, he can send himself up really well. So I enjoyed this. And like all Jason Statham films, you're waiting for a franchise to come. And the end of this film leaves something open, as there's loads of loose ends about Statham's character and Jesse still at the end of the film. One that I'm sure could be served up with extra lashings of mayhem within it. I'd go and see it. So I'm going to give that one a rate. And now we're going to go back to music from True Stories. And I've got a couple of bursts of three songs together. And as I say, this complete soundtrack, which you can find on the Criterion Blu-ray of True Stories, which has a separate CD containing the complete soundtrack. So although many of these songs were on the Talking Heads album, this is them as they appear in the film with the actors singing. So there's going to be three all together here, and I'm going to start off with Talking Heads and John Goodman doing People Like Us.
In 1950, when I was born, Papa couldn't afford to buy us much. He said, be proud of what you are. There's something special about people like us. The telephone, people like us, growing big as a house, people like us, they're gonna make it because we don't want freedom, we don't want justice, we just want third grade class. I gave my answer and it caused a fuss. I'm not the same as everyone else, and times were hard for people. We just want someone to love, someone to love. Well now, what good is freedom? God laughs at people like us. I see it coming, like a light coming down from above. Clouds roll by and the moon comes up. How long must we live in the heat of the sun? millions of people are waiting on love. And this is a song about people like us. People like us, who will answer the telephone. We just want someone to love, someone to love, someone to love, someone to love.
Talking Heads with John Goodman there, doing People Like Us from the soundtrack of True Stories. And moving straight into another track, this is Radiohead from the same film. Talking Heads here with Tito La Riva, Steve Jacobs and Los Vampiros.
New world.
Radiohead there from the True Story soundtrack. And to end this little burst of numbers from the film, this is the very beautiful Dream Operator with vocals from Annie McEnroe. Song's been going through my head all week. I absolutely adore it. Time for another review. And a film that's just starting this week. Send Help, a desert island survival movie with Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien. What can I say about this? Well, it's a bit of a mashup between maybe it starts off with a bit of Working Girl, then there's some American Psycho, then two characters who are very much in opposition to each other are in a plane crash, which then means that they're stranded on a desert island where the roles between boss and employee are reversed quite strongly. There's also bits of Castaway in it, the Oliver Reed and Amanda Donahoe version. There's a big chunk of the recent Cannes winner Triangle of Silence in it. And the film which really stood out to me as being drawn from was John Borman's Hell in the Pacific, where Lee Marvin and Toshiro Mifune are stranded on a desert island in the middle of the Second World War. And in fact, there's one particular shot that is exactly duplicated in Send Help. But maybe the main thing about this film is that it's directed by Sam Raimi, the director of the Evil Dead movies, and who made the first three Spider-Man movies. And so it's not going to be a nice reconciliation between two people. And if you've seen the trailer, there are some bits there which are, you know, a little extreme, a little outside of the normal desert island Robinson Crusoe fantasy. And it does have some quite alarming tonal changes, but I quite liked it because it does keep you guessing a bit. And for most of the film, in fact, I didn't like either of the two participants. So both have very, very questionable aspects to their character. I also realised, I'm thinking, have I ever seen Rachel McAdams in a film before? She's lost on me. And then I remembered, she was in The Family Stone. She was the character who I could never remember in it. One of those actors that's completely bypassed me with my film going over the past 20-odd years. So it's it's an enjoyable hour and 40 minutes, hour and 50 minutes. And as I say, it does keep pulling the carpet out from underneath you at points. And be warned, as it's a Sam Raimi film, there are some bits which you might find rather testing, let's say. There's a wild boar hunt which might put you off a pork sandwich for a few weeks. Berry's shops will, I think, be having a bit of a hit on their customer base. But I enjoyed it. It doesn't mess around. It gets straight into things. And there is some nice interplay between McAdams and O'Brien. And I like the way that McAdams' character did have, right from the beginning, some aspects about her. Well, you thought, well, you know, I'm not actually sure whether I should be sympathising with her that much. Although the male characters are, as you might expect, completely appalling. I don't want to say too much else because I'll spoil some of the twists and turns that the film pulls on you. So, yeah, I'm going to give that a rate as well. Only two films to review, but, you know, they're two good films if you want to go out and just have a night at the pictures. I'd recommend them completely. And so another tranche of numbers from Talking Heads. And this is, let me just call up. This one is Papa Legba. With Papa Legba, also accompanied there with Pop Staples. I've just got one more track to play after this. But I think the film itself of True Stories is a film that needs to be rediscovered. It's a great snapshot of America, or what America believed it was back in the mid-80s, even though there was all that Reagan nonsense going on as well. But there's a sense of innocence to it. You'll be pleased to know that there's not a single red baseball cap to be seen anywhere within the film. So it's a great little, snapshot of a moment in time and a sort of sense of Americana, which certainly, watching from this side of the Atlantic, seem to have been lost somewhat. I've just got one more track from film, which is done with some of the characters from the film. And this is Puzzling Evidence, which features John Ingle and the Burt Cross Choir. I'll just get it teed up. But yeah, I think you might be able to get this on some of the streaming platforms, or you can buy the Blu-ray, Criterion Blu-ray, which plays on machines from this country in your HMV shop, which is about the only place you can buy a Blu-ray now. So here we go with our final track, Puzzling Evidence.
It's late, it's late. You got the CBS and the ABC. You got Time and Newsweek, they're the same to me. Now don't you wanna get right?
with me.
Was there ever since?
I hope you get everything you need.
Was there ever since?
But it's a
was there ever since? Was there ever since? Was there ever since? Drop hard in your heart.
Oh, hard in your heart. You'll listen. Now I am the gun, and you are the bullet. I got the power and glory, and the money to buy it. You got your gold and Western and your MasterCard. Got what you wanted, lost what you had.
Evidence there from the soundtrack of True Stories. So just very quickly, next week Wuthering Heights is starting, bodice ripping romance there for you, and next Saturday will be Valentine's Day, so we will be doing a love special for Valentine's Day. I'm sure you're dreading what I'm going to dig up from my particular vault from that, but take the rough with the smooth on that one. And so we'll be doing a whole thing on romance in the cinema. Not. And Denise will be back, so she'll be curtailing my darker tastes there for romance. But I've hoped you've enjoyed today's canter through Talking Heads and True Stories. Enjoy your films for this week, and I'm going to leave you with one last track from the film. This is City of Dreams, just by Talking Heads.